Welcome to the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. On this podcast, you'll hear stories to encourage, inspire, and empower you to be the best healthcare advocate that you can be for yourself or for a loved one. The information provided in this podcast is not to be used for any medical advice. This is for information only and to support you in your journey. Please consult with your physician and medical team. In fact, share your favorite episode with your team and ask questions from that.
This is a really unique episode because I'm going to actually be speaking with four other women who are all in the health and wellness space. And we're going to discuss preparing our bodies for fall, not only for yourself, but also for your kids. So whether you are a mom, a dad, a grandma, an uncle, aunt, whoever you are, if you have any children in your life, this is a great episode to listen. And there's still time to register for the Fall Family Summit. And the registration link, it's free, is in the show notes. So we will begin on September 18th, and you will receive video links for 1 to 2 interviews a day, including the interview of this panel. But here you get to listen to it in advance. So thanks so much and enjoy the show. Good morning, good day to everybody watching our panel on the Fall Family Summit. And we're going to present here with the five of us today to talk a little bit about how to prepare our bodies for the transition to fall and winter. So thanks so much for joining us. I just want to introduce our panel. But before that, of course, a disclaimer to say that all the information you hear today is not to be meant for any personal diagnosis. Please listen and take in the information, do your own research on what we're saying, and discuss it with your medical professionals and your health team if you're going to be making any changes to your lifestyle. And thank you so much for tuning in to us today. So first I'll welcome Lauren Bauer, and she's a physical therapist and a holistic health coach. Welcome, Lauren.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. And then we have Annette Lasitra, and she is a plant-based culinary coach and wellness chef.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, Annette. And then we have Alyssa, and she is a certified fermentationist, and she has a company called Healthy Gut and Happy Child.
Thanks so much, Christine, for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for coming. And then last but not least, we have Misty Giordano. She is a professional wellness and self-care specialist. Welcome, Misty.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
Of course. So today we're going to get started with a couple of questions that our subscribers to the summit have asked us. And the first one is ways to lower our LDL, so your low-density lipoproteins as part of your cholesterol. Does anybody have any input into that? So I think, you know, looking at our diet and what we're eating, if we are eating from all of the food sources, meats and vegetables, dairy products, all of those things that are higher in saturated fat are going to have more cholesterol, but that, you know, the cholesterol isn't a bad thing. It's how we are consuming it. So if it's oxidized, if we're heating it under high heat and then eating it, or if it's fried, that's going to change and oxidize that cholesterol. So in my knowledge, that really is what makes cholesterol bad. In addition, most of the cholesterol that our body makes does not come from dietary sources. So it's, you know, I don't want to jump in and talk about that, but our body makes its own cholesterol. So
I'm kind of in agreement with you, Christine, and, you know, it really kind of depends on the type of what we're putting into our body, because it's, you know, there's also what is our body doing, what, you know, what movement. But it really, you know, I think to kind of target that first is really what are we putting into our bodies. And I think plant-based is obviously you're going to find the most healing when you're eating the most plants. And so two, with our cholesterol, we know that that is tied into our liver. So what's going on with the liver? And we want to also, you know, always support our liver. I know a lot of people tend to think of cleansing, detoxing, which is very helpful, but we have to kind of know where, you know, and I guess it depends on where our levels are at, but what can we do to support our body, our liver, our gut? And so a lot of plant-based is where we're going to find where we're going to see shifts in our cholesterol, because if we're kind of supporting our liver to work, you know, have it function properly, then we're going to definitely see our cholesterol kind of change. There's an alignment there with our liver, with our gut, and how our cholesterol is doing. But I would definitely say lots of fruit, lots of veggies, and just, you know, I mean, you can add in some nuts and seeds, of course, and I'm not anti, you know, meat or animal protein, but I think it's really helpful when we back off on some of the animal protein, because our bodies just aren't meant to digest and constantly have animal protein in our bodies, because that, you know, and of course it's the different types of fat that we're putting in. But I really believe that, yeah, there's a lot to be said with kind of, you know, shifting our cholesterol, especially when we're eating, you know, and in a positive way, when we're eating more plant-based. So I think that's huge.
Great. Anybody else?
Yeah, I am. So I don't specifically work with lowering cholesterol levels. I'm working with moms and their kids with the intention of supporting their kids, reducing the tantrums and addressing tummy trouble so that they just feel better and really make things smoother for the whole family, including if we're going to support our gut health and all of the systems that depend on gut health. We need to be eating these plant-based foods. We need to be eating a lot of vegetables. I really focus on vegetables for a variety of reasons. You know, fruits are sweet. We're usually not running into problems with kids consuming fruits. And so what I found is that when we're able to kind of peel back the layers of what's underneath and internal about the source of the picky eating, then we can move into the territory of more vegetables for the kid in a way that the kid is really driving that. So then to connect it back to the cholesterol, when our gut bacteria, when our gut microbiome is balanced, and again, this is individual, you know, every different child has a different set of genetics, environmental factors, access to different kinds of food for different reasons. So we get to do this individually. And once that gets settled, I'm sure all of you ladies have experienced the other systems in our bodies really start calming down and getting into balance too.
Absolutely. Anyone else?
Yeah, you know what, Christine, I actually, I love what everybody is saying, and I kind of want to take a more of a different approach with my answer. So all the food things are amazing, and I think that a lot of what drives our food choices is what's happening in our lives, our stress responses, because if we have a lot of outside stress going on, I know for me, I fall into that trap all the time. You know, if I get stressed out, I forget to eat. And then I take myself into like hypoglycemia and then I'm eating the first thing that's in front of my face, right? So it could be bread, it could be chocolate, it could be, you know, whatever it is, I'm just hungry at that point. So I think, you know, really looking not only at your food choices, but like what your life looks like that's driving your food choices could be a game changer for you too. Because, you know, a lot of what I do is from my own personal experience. I've been working with functional medicine doctors for years for my own. I have some autoimmune issues, and they were all stress driven. And I kind of actually did it to myself. And so it, for me, taking that look at it, going, oh, like, okay, when I got really busy, I forgot to eat, and I would eat the first thing in my face, and that it wouldn't be a good thing. And it's this spiral effect, but it all starts with what's going on in your life, your response to it, how you're, you know what I mean? Your self-care, that piece of it. So that, in addition to all these other amazing responses and the foods, it all works so well in tandem together.
Absolutely, because we aren't just one body system. We aren't just our cholesterol levels or our this level. So when we look at things in those isolated forms, it can be really easy to get into the trap of trying to fix that one thing But really, we should be stepping back and looking at how all of our body systems function together, and that includes stress levels. There's so many sources of inflammation in our body, and one of the jobs of cholesterol that we naturally make is to repair damage. So if we are in this state of inflammation from stress, not sleeping, poor eating, crazy schedules, you know, that is just going to set us up to have more difficulties wherever our weakest link is. And so that may be the case that our body, for whether it's genetic issues or the environment that we live in, makes a lot of LDL. And that can then become exacerbated when we are under these high stress, chronic stress, right? So stress is good. Stress to feel that you have a deadline, or to feel stressed that there's a dangerous situation and what we need to react to it. Those are all healthy, appropriate responses, but this chronic stress. So one thing that I've done is make a joy versus annoy list. So I would invite everybody to write down things that bring you joy. And a funny thing, when I first did this, that list was kind of short compared to my annoy list. That was like a whole page. And so if that's the case for you and your family, what do you need to do to either take away some of those annoy items or help move them onto your joy list? Because we really want to have the list of the joy longer than the list of the annoy. And I think if we take a look at that and diet, exercise, lifestyle choices, all can play into that. And may at first feel like, I can't make changes. My life is so crazy right now. I would start with that. Just that idea that I can't do this. And let's explore why you can't do this. And so I think that's the great thing about all five of us. We all have a little bit of a different take on this. But bottom line, we want to support all of your body systems. And so anybody else have ways to overall to take a look at stresses in our life, or how you would advise someone to kind of just even begin with something like that?
You know what? This is pretty much the first thing that I always do with the women that I work with, because like you said, if you're feeling like, oh, I'm so stressed, like there's too much to do, like there's no room for change. And so we need to open up that space for just a teeny little change so that that can just cascade. And often what I will do is just together, we'll just stop and take three big belly breaths. And that's the beginning of opening just a little crack where we can start exploring, okay, what are some other ways that you can shift from your fight or flight response, this emergency catching up all behind mode, into our natural state, our rest and digest state, which is where our bodies are designed to be functioning all the time. But like you said, you know, we're stuck away from that. And so then we get to work on just little bits and expanding that window in the way that works for that particular person, for that particular family. And then we get to build. So then the joy list not only has these joyful things, but these joyful things are routes back out of stress and into our rest and digest mode, where we're able to actually like recognize how much more joy there really is in our life. And
that's great. Let's all take those three deep belly breaths. I'm serious. So if you're watching at home, go ahead. And Alyssa, would you like to lead us?
Yeah, sure. I invite everyone to kind of get your feet flat on the floor and kind of shake out your body a little so you feel relaxed. Close your eyes. And what we're going to do is we're going to take a nice big inhale, hold it a little bit at the top, and I want you to fill up your belly with air. Let it get really big, like a balloon. And then when we exhale, we're going to blow the air out of that belly gently and let that balloon kind of goes flat. And we'll do it three times. Okay, here we go. Eyes closed. Inhale. And hold. And exhale. flatten out that belly and hold it out a bit. Now inhale. Fill up that big belly balloon and hold. And exhale. And hold. And one more inhale. And exhale. Open your eyes. And I move around. How does everyone feel? Do you feel different?
I do.
I do.
My very first breath you gave us, I took it way from the chest, and I realized that's not where I should be breathing from my accessory muscles. I should be using my diaphragm, my main muscle of inspiration.
But I love hanging out with physical therapists.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, the things that we learn in the PT school or from a medical realm, we're looking about the physiology and all that, but it all links back to traditional ancient practices, pranayama, the life energy, life force energy that we're breathing in and nourishing. We are breathing in oxygen. Every single cell in us requires oxygen. Your workhouse of your cell, your mitochondria, requires oxygen to function. So we need to be breathing in. And, you know, this slow pursed lip exhalation, why that works scientifically is we are actually creating resistance against our alveolar sacs so that more oxygen can come into our bloodstream. So there's science. I know there's great science behind these traditions that we use in yoga, that we use in meditation. It's common knowledge now that we should be breathing slowly, but there is science to support this.
So it's interesting that you say that too, because I agree. And with, you know, the coaching piece of it and just really talking to people in general, as you know, as a human being, everything is very simple that we should be doing. But as a human, and with all the noise we have on this planet stress, right, we complicate things. And there's really four main pillars of what it is that we need to be doing. They're very simple, but again, we get complicated with it. So one of them is breathing. And breathing is, I mean, really, we don't breathe enough, and we tend to be very shallow breathers. And so, like you said, we kind of breathe from our lungs when we really should be breathing a lot from our belly. And, you know, that's, maybe you can't do it all day long, but if you're at and I do this trick too for myself, is if you're driving and you're at a stoplight, instead of picking up your phone or, you know, kind of getting lost in something else, just at a stoplight is just take a couple deep breaths and, you know, you reset your whole feel, the way you feel, you relax. I mean, granted you're in the car. I mean, I don't mean close your eyes, but, you know, definitely do some of that breathing, because you know, whenever you feel that you're stressed out, just stop, move to, you know, to the side for 1 second, do a couple, you know, deep breaths, and you really reset your mind, your whole body. But breathing is huge. One of the other pillars is rest. We forget to sleep and we forget to do good sleeping, or it's just forgetting to take that time. We tend to think that, okay, we need to, you know, I could sleep for 4 hours and then I'll be good, you know, and it's like our body needs rest and repair for a reason. The third one is hydration. We're a very dehydrated society. And so if we could just get water in, and obviously lots of, you know, there I go again, but with fruits and vegetables, there's a lot of living water in your fruits and in your veggies. And so with hydration and kind of moving into, you know, the fruits and veggies and just plants in general, the fourth thing really is food. And we need to eat from Mother Nature, what Mother Nature gave us, you know, eating from the ground up. And granted, I agree, it really is just so much whatever's going in our life, you know, going on in our lives. It drives our eating patterns. Absolutely. I was in the same boat. I totally agree. But, you know, kind of thinking of those four main pillars to just stop and think, okay, what do we need to really reset our bodies? We need to breathe. We need to rest. And sometimes it's not resting with our computers, our phones, or whatever it is, a magazine. Resting is with yourself. And that's, you know, if I could just kind of encourage anybody to do that, even if it's for 2 minutes, you know, go just sit for 2 minutes or 5 minutes, take some breath, take a moment to just listen to you. And, you know, and then, you know, looking at what we're drinking or what we're eating, those are the biggest keys. So, you know, I know movement is another big thing, but you know, it's kind of an ancient, what I learned this was through like, you know, a Mayan practice. And so when I did something, with some of the Mayans, they, were kind of talking about these four main pillars. And it was like, God, those are so easy, but we tend to complicate it and think, oh my gosh, I'm so busy, I'm this and that, and we are. But how do we actually take a step back for, again, maybe if it's even 2 minutes through the day, to give yourself some time to just breathe it out for a couple minutes?
Absolutely. Yeah, Lauren.
So I'd love to chime in. So I wanted to echo some things that Christine and Alyssa had said. So Christine, so one of my roles as a coach that I really love to do is help moms create the actionable steps, because we know what we should be doing, but how do we implement it, right? And so that practical, just like, let's make it simple, let's build it into the routine. And so I love your little, your exercise about the joy versus annoy list. And one thing I want to give moms permission to do is simplify. You know, if that annoy list is really long, is there something you can let go of? You know, Alyssa said you have to create space in order to create space for change. And, you know, we're all overscheduled. Our kids are overscheduled nowadays. And I would just really give the moms permission to simplify. If there's an activity that you're dragging your kid to every week, they don't love it, you don't love it, do you really need it? Or do you, or is there something else that you could be doing in that time, like relaxing or connecting or simplifying? So yeah, just permission to simplify your schedule or to outsource things. You know, if you really hate a certain thing, you know, like cleaning the house, you know, is it in the budget to be able to hire a house cleaner a couple times a month? And just start to look at that joy versus annoy list and really how you can make those actionable steps. But then also to circle back on the whole group is agreeing that we need to get our kids to eat more vegetables, right? Fruits is kind of easy, it's sweet, they like it, but vegetables is tricky. So I was hoping we could, you know, each give a couple tips as to how we encourage veggies. I'll share a couple of my tips. And is that a topic we can jump into?
Absolutely.
Because again, I'm all about like action steps. Yes, I know I want my kids to eat more veggies than they are now, so I'll share what works for me, but I also want to learn from you ladies too.
Okay.
So in my house, you know, there's definite, well, there's not necessarily a vegetable at breakfast. There's room for improvement there, but definitely at lunch, snacks, and dinner, there's vegetables. At dinner, it's not a problem. It's steamed vegetables with a little bit of coconut oil and sea salt. My kids are pretty happy to eat that. But one of the things we started playing at dinner time is a game that we call Plants on the Plate. And so we look around at our plate and we try to identify like, oh, look, there's, you know, lettuce and carrots and broccoli and, oh, you know, if it's taco night, oh, look, it's a tortilla. Well, what's that made of? Oh, it's made with corn. You know, so we start to identify really like what are the actual ingredients that are on our plate and connect where they come from. Because nowadays kids are very disconnected, our society is disconnected from what they're actually eating. So Plants on the Plate has been fun. And then also the rainbow, like really trying to see, do we have something red in this meal? Orange, yellow, green, and looking at the different colors of the meal. So those are two games that we play at our house.
That's excellent. Anybody else?
Yeah, I think it's just to kind of piggyback off of that, I agree. When I've done, kids classes and just working with, you know, kids occasionally is, I and with adults too, if you think about it, we tend to, with the rainbow, eat the rainbow. And I'm very big on that too, is because, you know, a lot of times we think, okay, how can I get my serving, you know, whatever the recommended amount is, you know, between, what is it, 10 and 13, or, you know, everyone's kind of got a different amount of serving for fruits and vegetables that we should be eating every single day. And that kind of seems daunting if we think about it. You know, I really would encourage to think, instead of how can I get all of my fruits and veggies servings in throughout the day, and, you know, veggies, of course, too, is how can I get, how can I make my plate bright every time I eat? Like, how bright can I make my plate at every meal? And, you know, what different colors can I use at every meal? Because that tends to be something that, like you said, it's more fun and you identify, it's colorful. I've also found that making little you know, and it's just kind of like playing with your food, if you will. So I made a cute, like a cucumber tower with the kids at one of my classes, and they all loved it because it was basically just kind of slicing cucumbers and tomatoes on top. And then we did some radishes, you know, just in rounds, and you made like a little tower, and then you put guacamole on the top of that, and then hummus on the top. And then we grated some carrots and just a little bit of salt and pepper. And, you know, you can kind of modify it whatever way you want, but, you know, kind of doing that, that's pretty simple. You kind of cut a bunch of cucumbers, a bunch of radishes, just different things, and have them kind of play with it a little bit, or, you know, even making, you know, like a smiley face, or the spiralized noodles I found is a very big thing. Spiralized zucchini rather noodles, or spiralized of the yellow squash. They love to use the spiralizer, and then they see the noodles, and then they can eat it there. You don't have to boil them. You don't have to do any, I mean, you can cook them a little bit, but they're raw, but they're pretty. And I have a couple kids that just, you know, in the classes, and including my nieces, like absolutely love the spiralizer, and it's super simple. It's super fast. So, you know, I think the colors is a really good thing, and really just also kind of making something a little bit different on the plate. And, you know, they may gravitate toward a little bit faster.
Lauren, thank you so much for asking this question, because I think it's really at the forefront of many moms every waking moment. And I love your plants on the plate. I love that game. That's awesome. We're definitely going to start doing that at home. And Annette, I totally love your basically like play with your food, get your fingers in there, build, have fun, get involved. And I also really want to just let all of the moms who are listening, who have picky eaters and are feeling worried and embarrassed and frustrated and like scared that their kids aren't getting enough nutrition, I just want to take that off your shoulders and make sure everyone knows that picky eating is really, really not about it's not about what you're doing necessarily. There's a lot of emphasis around behavior and food. And in my experience, there are such powerful internal mediators of appetite that are getting completely missed. And it's just compelling moms to continue in this very, very stressed state. When you're worried about your kids, it's like, are you kidding me? I'm going to stop and take 3 deep breaths. Like, I need my kid to eat vegetables now, right? It's almost an emergency every day. So I really encourage everyone to take a look at things like, could there be, like a nutritional status going on? Zinc copper ratios, are something to get interested in, because zinc, when it's too low, we don't have an important part in that biochemical cascade that is driving appetite. You've probably seen lots of kids that are wearing, like, they'll only wear sweatpants or tight pants because they can't stand like harsh fabrics. They can't stand loud noises. There's this whole suite of things that go along with zinc deficiency, and picky eating is one of them. It's almost epidemic. So again, I'm not making any medical recommendations. Definitely check in with your family physician about this, and get interested in it, because I have seen children go from eating nothing but cucumber and maybe a baby carrot once in a while to literally grabbing the broccoli off their parents' plates in about a week and a half. So, and there are other things, you know, different kinds of foods. Dairy actually often will create major appetite problems. A kid will not want any other food. And I'm really sticking my neck out here and just like saying what I see. And so sometimes you just need to remove one food, and then things come back into balance. The inflammation subsides and things start working right. And I say working right because our bodies need all these vegetables. Like, we're all really clear on that. And so if a kid is not eating the vegetables, then there's something wrong. There's something out of balance. And we get to tap into that calm and take a step forward in helping our children and ourselves have a more relaxed and fun life.
Lauren?
So a question that comes up a lot when I'm chatting with moms and might be good for us to chime in on is, they are afraid to remove a food. Mm-hmm. You know, here we are teaching, you know, the group in the summit that there are certain foods that are increasing inflammation and are harmful to our health and to our family's health, our children. But, oh my goodness, but my doctor says that my child has to have dairy. And now you're telling me that dairy might be a problem. And so there's a lot of fear in removing gluten and dairy. You know, yes, we can agree. It's easy. The moms understand they have to remove sugar, but gluten and dairy, especially the dairy, can be scary. So, you know, do you guys have any input on that when you come up with that fear in moms?
Before we move on to that question, I actually have to add to the other two questions, the gratitude plus the food. So with the food, I was actually writing some notes because I was just kind of like my brain was just kind of going with different things as you guys were talking. I loved all the suggestions. So one of the things that we're all Institute for Integrative Nutrition Health Coaches, right? So one of the concepts that we learned is crowding out. So if you are looking at your kid who loves potato chips, right? And so instead of saying, no, we're going to take away the potato chips and we're going to replace them with kale chips, maybe try like 3/4 potato chips and 1/4 kale chips, and then slowly start to like increase the amount of kale chips. So you're kind of crowding out the bad stuff while not going cold turkey on them. So that was one idea. So kind of doing that. But then another thing too is, you know, we've all talked about how we have busy lifestyles and moms get caught in this, you know, going from the activities to the school to the homework to all these different things. And sometimes, you know, the best intentions of having this really amazing meal kind of go to the back burner. So maybe an idea, and I'm totally for eating your food and letting it digest and chewing and all these things, but sometimes maybe doing like a green smoothie or juice, like investing in a blender and or a juicer could be a really great way to kind of get those things in a pinch, especially when you're talking about veggies, because you can throw fruits and veggies in a smoothie, in a juice. You know, it's something they can take with them on the go. So it's playing with it, right? Playing with that. And to that also, I kind of had this really fun idea that could be exciting for you moms, is having like a mommy and me juice date, like every day, where it's like a ritual where you and your kid get together and you have, you know, your green smoothie together, or you have, I don't know, some carrots and hummus or whatever it is that you're doing, but you're doing it together. So there's that piece of like connection and they're watching you do this together, right? You're leading by example, but you're also helping them in such an amazing way. And then the last thing I wanted to add to the gratitude, just real quick, kind of backtracking a little bit. You know, when we think about adding more joy to our lives, we always seem to get in a habit of going, I'll be happy when, or I will have so much gratitude when. And that when could be when I go on vacation or when the kids go to school or when I have 5 minutes of peace and quiet. And so one thing I wanted to add to the breathing, what's something easy that you can do is like include something that you are grateful for right now. And it could be something so simple as the fact that you have lungs, like we talked a lot about breathing, that you have lungs to breathe. Or that you have eyes to see, if you're in the car, that you have a vehicle, if you're doing dishes, that you have plates to eat on and food to eat. It could be things that we don't think about being grateful for that we actually have so much of, right? All these things that could be free to us that a lot of people don't have. You know, you walk into a hospital, that'll give you some really amazing gratitude, right? For the things that you have, your lungs, your legs, your working limbs, like your organs, right? So just these things can actually help flood you with gratitude for the things that you don't necessarily have to buy, the things that come for free, but that we take for granted. So just an idea there. And so now we could go back to the gluten and the dairy. Sorry about that, Lauren.
Yeah, no, those are all really good points. So thanks for chiming in. I mean, smoothies are a great way to sneak in the veggies and, you know, making a point that you're eating veggies together. I think that's a really sweet idea. And then of course, gratitude, like let's take what we have and instead of feeling like we're lacking or like we're not enough, you know, we fall into that trap as moms. a lot, and just really switching to that gratitude for how much we do already have.
I love that.
That's great. So if we could segue, because it is a common question I get from moms, it's like, you know, am I going to set them up for a different nutritional deficiency if I cut out dairy?
You know, that is a huge question, because we have all been programmed growing up to eat dairy, and dairy is essential. Dairy was its own freaking food group, right? and there are a lot of really healthy people, super healthy people, arguably less inflamed people, that are not eating dairy. And so this is one thing that can make a mom's life way more stressful if that's present. So a couple of years ago, one of my very first clients, she came to me, she was in a group class, and she spent about 6 weeks, getting ready to remove dairy. Like, she had a little boy who had had a runny nose for 4 years straight, basically his entire life. And she was suspicious, and she didn't want to hurt him. Just like you're describing, she was really concerned about removing this major food group. And so that's what we worked on for 6 weeks. And then the program ended, and she still hadn't removed dairy, and it was fine. You know, we were just working with what she was interested in. Like, what are other, where can I bring in the same kind of nutrition? Logistically, how do I replace this because he loves it? And then a couple of months later, I got an email from her saying, I did it. I finally did it. And his runny nose went away for the first time in his life. And it's gone, gone, gone. And that just, it's amazing. But logistically, we need to go back to resetting our nervous systems, to bringing in the gratitude, and opening that little window of calm, and opening more little windows of calm every day, and getting really practice at switching back into our rest and digest, into our calm, so that we have the bandwidth to do the thing that's challenging, with our kid, with our family, to have a little more space to set up an alternative a little bit ahead. Like, if we're going to be around other people, we're going to take the time to bring in some other super fun snacks that maybe are not super healthy, but they're so attractive that your kid is going to be so, so juiced that you got the junk food for them. No dairy, because that's what you're working on. You can transition out of this stuff later, but you stay really focused on that one goal of setting them free from the inflammation that might be influencing their digestion, the constipation, the wetting the bed at night so they can't go on sleepovers, the having poop accidents because they've got such massive backup. What else?
Rashes and moodiness.
Their behavior. What was that?
Rashes and moodiness.
Oh my gosh. So at a lecture just yesterday that I was at, I have an exact quote. I don't have it in front of me, but it was basically like acne and dairy. Mm-hmm. Dairy makes acne worse. If you don't believe me, look at the research. It was just, there is no question. Mm-hmm. There is no question.
Right. And you know what? And speaking of, like you said, rashes, so anything kind of coming out of your skin and you see it, you know, eczema, psoriasis, anything like that. I have a cousin that he had eczema ever since he was a baby, and kind of talking to him, he's now vegan and that was by choice, but taking out, he said the first thing that when he noticed right away his eczema, and this is now he's an adult, but when he had done this himself, he took out the dairy and he's like, my eczema gone. And he has not had a problem with it since. So like you said, just kind of the rashes, you know, things that are coming out and your skin, you know, your liver is kind of trying to detox it and say, okay, well, I need to get this stuff out. And so when it's coming out in your skin, it's like, okay, well, that's a big sign to say, okay, I may have to support my liver a little bit more. And what are the foods that are triggering a potential, you know, something that going on in the body, it can be feeding that some sort of pathogen or something that's triggering an inflammatory response, runny nose, skin rashes, yeah, eczema, mm-hmm. anything that's you know, like, or even just bloating, gas, different things. That's huge. Like when you take dairy out, and you kind of notice that there's a big correlation there. I mean, the other thing I like to think about and talk to people about too, my clients, is, you know, we're really the only animal technically that eats another animal's dairy or drinks another animal's milk, animal or their milk. So, I mean, it just, and I've had a lot of people say, gosh, that's a good point, and I didn't think about it. We are the only animal technically that consumes another animal's milk. Mm-hmm. And to that, someone's like, that is so odd that we don't think that it's so odd. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. It's true. But just, you know, especially with the dairy being mucus forming and just feeding any sort of pathogenic activities. So again, if we have cold and flu season, I know we're coming kind of into it, or, you know, within the fall and winter. And, you know, I tend to see people still drinking their milk, eating their cheese, doing that, and, you know, consuming dairy products when they've got the flu or a cold. And it's like, well, there's some pathogenic activity, virus, bacteria going on in your body at the time, and you're just continuing to feed it when you're putting in dairy. So if you want to heal from, you know, maybe what's going on, the inflammation, the cold, flu, cutting back or cutting out the dairy is a big thing to kind of focus on. But I also like the crowding out piece too. And all of you ladies are, you know, giving such awesome ideas. But, you know, yeah, kind of that slow switch is maybe putting a couple things in front of it. Maybe coconut milk or almond milk, and then give a little of the dairy. So you're kind of doing half and half, you know, just to kind of slow that process of really cutting it out cold turkey.
You know, I actually have a different opinion here, and I want to get back to Lauren because she mentioned moodiness and behavior, and this is a huge, huge piece. Removing dairy is not an easy endeavor, especially when you're a mom with a child who loves dairy, because as Lauren was alluding to, there are very, very strong behavioral implications here. Inflammation goes everywhere in our body. And when we've got inflammation in our brain, we're acting differently. When we've got inflammation anywhere and are uncomfortable, we're acting differently. We're like I'm acting like a jerk when I'm uncomfortable. And our kids, like, they are too. And we know that there are opioid-like compounds in dairy and gluten for that matter. And so they're addictive. So we've got neural changes and we've got an addictive component. So it's really important to get support in having some success with this, because like we all know, moms are maxed out. And so to attempt and have a failure is going to make it a lot less likely that we are trying this again. I don't know, Lauren, what is your opinion about this?
Yeah, I completely agree with what you said. But I got to say, as a mom who's been through this, it was really scary for me to cut out, you know, first our family cut out gluten, and that was when my son was two. And it was scary to do. I felt like I was depriving my child, that I was going to harm him, yet I knew the science behind why I wanted to do this experiment. And really what I try to tell moms is there's no harm in doing an experiment. Do a 1 month experiment, become a case study, and just get really curious. And to really be successful in making a dietary change of removing a food, it's best to have the whole family do it together. You know, so talk with your significant other, get the whole family on board, get the dairy out of the house. You know, for us, first it was gluten. We got it out of the house. We committed to 1 month. And like Alyssa said, there are addictive compounds, the casomorphine in milk and the gluteomorphine in gluten. And so when you decide to get rid of them and do a real trial, it has to be 100%. And that it to be most successful, right? So, but just, I like to encourage mamas that our kids' bodies heal incredibly fast. So within 3 days of cold turkey removing gluten from our home, 3 days, my child's eczema gone. And he started smiling more and interacting more. And that was when he was two. And then it was at age three, you know, we were still having major issues. My kiddo was collecting a lot of labels. And life was really, really stressful. And per the suggestion of a naturopath, she said, you know, why don't you try going dairy-free? So when we removed dairy 100%, so now it was gluten and dairy, within 3 weeks, my kiddo was talking again because he had lost his speech. So there's a big correlation between dairy and, like you guys are all saying, inflammation and congestion and all this stuff that's so important going into cold and flu season. We don't want our kids to be congested and getting colds and need ear tubes and things like that. Like, it's try removing dairy for months, see what happens. But for my kiddo, it was a big leap in language, and that's another common thing with dairy. I wanted to segue into, because I know we don't want to be on this call forever, but I want to segue into what the next question I get from moms is, okay, so now if my family is going to eat differently, we don't eat gluten or we don't eat dairy or we don't eat both or whatever, how do I live in and interact with society? What do I do in a social situation? So if you guys are okay, I think with talking about that, that's such a huge thing. Like, how are these moms going to navigate? How are you guys going to navigate the holiday season without gluten or dairy or both of those things?
Absolutely. And this will be our last question for the panel. This has been an exciting panel, but we're coming up to the very end. So I think, you know, luckily the consumers are wanting more gluten-free and dairy-free products. So there are a lot more out there, but I'll just say that just because it's gluten-free and dairy-free doesn't mean it's healthy. So still limiting, you know, for a treat, we're still limiting how many treats we're giving our kids, filling our kids up with good foods before we go out to the party. And if you need to bring some options with you, absolutely. If you know you're going to a holiday party that's going to be full of gluten and dairy, let's bring a couple of treats with us that your child likes. And definitely making the child understand that this is not a punishment, that this is something that, you know, it's to help you keep healthy. And it might also be helpful as you as a mom who then also avoids eating things off of the other, you know, the kids want to do what we do. Kids want to eat what we have. So go ahead and work with your child during those times to give them options that you're also consuming at the same time. Anybody else?
Yeah, it's a team effort. Like Lauren was saying, like the whole family does it. The whole family does it because we're social creatures. Like we are designed to be in community. And when we are not in community, like that feeling of alienation, that's going to turn on all that fight or flight response all the time again and really set us back. It's really stressful. And likewise, it's stressful. So it would be stressful for a kid to do it without the family doing it. And like, it's stressful for a mom to do this with her family in this community, as Lauren was saying. And so, yeah, like what you're talking about, Christine, like be prepared, like have a list of the things that you bring as replacements when you go to a party, when there's something happening at the school, and stay stocked in those things, stay stocked in them. And, you know, I honestly, I really encourage moms to take liberties with the substitutions because it's already such a challenge, especially in the beginning, to do something different. And, you know, we're trying to stay in community because like we need that social experience and laughter and reinforcement and eating together. And so I'm pretty liberal about like, you know, we're not going to eat that thing, but we're going to eat this thing that is so much better. And yeah, maybe it's loaded with sugar, maybe it's total junk, but this is how we're going to get through this short period. This is a bridge into a place where it's automatic for us and our expectations have shifted and it's just easier. So yeah, just do whatever it takes to get your family and your child through and yourself.
Misty, do you have anything to add, or Annette?
No, the one thing I was gonna say is in addition to all that other amazing, all the suggestions, it's amazing. It's just the preparation is huge. Like knowing this is gonna be a little bit of an issue, knowing there's gonna be temptations. You know, maybe one thing that you can think about is if you or your child has, like, they love this one thing about the holidays, like they love apple pie or they love, you know, whatever it is that they just absolutely love that it's going to be so hard for them to say no to. Maybe seeing, like, Annette probably has a plethora of recipes that you can recreate that thing where it doesn't have the stuff that they can't have in it. It might not taste completely the same, but at least they can feel like they're not missing out on like their favorite thing ever that they waited the entire year. Like maybe it's grandma's apple pie that she only makes for Thanksgiving, right? And so that's the only time of the year that they ever have this thing. Maybe there's a way to modify that, or, you know, and I know I'm going to go against it a little bit, but depending where you are and taking all this stuff out, sometimes I don't feel like it's that big of a deal to have like a little cheat here. You know what I'm saying? Like a little thing, like if it's just like just on the Thanksgiving, just like this one thing, this one time. Again, that kind of gets a little hairy depending on where you are and taking all this out and like the ramifications. But you know, an idea is just to see if you can recreate it in a way that they can have it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when we talk about removing foods, it's wonderful that this has cleared up, you know, for your son, Lauren, after 3 days of not being on the gluten or 2 weeks of, but I know for myself, you know, if I go back to eating something, it sets me off for multiple days. So this is all individuals and what you're comfortable with and what you, you know, how is this going to support your family overall? Like we can take out a bunch of stuff, but then if that adds even more stress to our life right now, we do want to try to find this balance. Like there's this yin and yang, right? We have to have this balance between things. But like Alyssa said, the gluten and dairy can have such an incredible impact that your child, once they start kind of feeling better, then you do crave more of what your body wants, and you don't want the dairy and the gluten. So your microbiome changes, and yeah, go ahead, Lauren.
Yeah, so I think another big piece of this is a mindset shift. So instead of feeling deprived that, oh, my kid can't have gluten anymore, can't have dairy anymore, and it's gonna be so complicated, like if we can shift that to an empowering decision, like, wow, I can improve my kid's health by gluten and dairy free, like, and now my kid is happier, healthier, and I'm happier and healthier, and our family unit is improving. To me, there's a stress in the beginning of making any change, any behavior or lifestyle change. There's that period of discomfort, and it's very cognitive. You have to really plan a lot. But there's the saying that nothing tastes better than healthy feels, or nothing tastes as good as healthy feels. And so, you know, if we're crave, you know, for us, it's not worth the risk and the consequence of having gluten or dairy. There's huge setbacks. But again, we all know it's a bio-individual thing. You know, sometimes it is just a personal preference because the difference is slight. But when it's a significant difference in a kid, you know, I really think it needs to be a priority. And, you know, like Alyssa said, you can really have a treat. Like it's okay every once in a while. Get the coconut milk ice cream, you know, and bring that to the party. But, you know, it doesn't have to be a depriving lifestyle. It can be a really empowering lifestyle.
Absolutely. That's great. That's a great viewpoint.
Yeah, really good point, because, you know, I think, you know, if we think about it too, is I know a lot of times, you know, because I'm also gluten-free and dairy-free, and I pretty much eat very plant-based, people ask me a lot, what do you eat? And how do you get your protein, or how do you get this or that? But, you know, and your dietary restriction. And I think we need to also kind of identify that term, like the terminology with dietary restriction, is really not, it's really not a restriction, because it's shifting our thought process. Yes. Around food, because really food is not pleasure. Food is fuel, but we definitely find pleasure in our food when we're fueling our body properly. And so there's a lot of education and awareness around that, but the dietary restriction label, if you will, it's like, well, what can't you have? And it's really like, well, I can have anything I want, or, you know, we can have anything we want, but how is it going to make our body feel? Is it going to, you know, show up in our skin? Is it going to show up in, you know, our headaches or whatever it is that we're getting? But, you know, when you restrict, when you say dietary restriction, again, I agree, it's not about restricting what it is. And when, you know, I get that question a lot, like, oh, what's your dietary restriction? I'm like, I'm not restrictive. Like, I'm restricted if I'm putting a lot of packaged and processed foods in my body, and, you know, maybe dairy and gluten, I'm then restricting my body from getting nutrients. And I want to put in a lot of nutrients in my body. So I want to be as much as, you know, as much fruit, vegetables, leafy greens, you know, nuts and seeds, different plant-based foods. I'm not restricting anything there. I'm like opening up a huge window of food that I can eat. But we get so in, you know, working at the food companies, you know, yeah, I mean, in marketing, I was finance, but, you know, it's the marketing. It's a lot of marketing to the kids. It's a lot of marketing to the parents. It's colorful boxes. It's very much marketing. And we do get a little, we get scared because we feel that, yeah, the dairy industry, they're big in the marketing. I mean, they're huge budget for marketing. Then you've got, you know, just packaged and processed foods in general with the food companies. It's very much a push. And that's where, you know, that's, there, all of that stuff is very restrictive, if you will, if you're eating that, because you're not getting the fuel that your body needs. So that's really the dietary restriction. That's really restriction is when you're restricting the amount of nutrients to really go into your body, as opposed to putting in all of what the fuel is, the plant-based fuel. I'm like, that's no restriction. That's like, that's a beautiful, you know, that's, there's so much bounty out there that I don't want to restrict myself from having nutrients by putting in something like a dairy, like gluten, something that's going to create issues in the body. So that's just something else. I think the education what Misty mentioned, yes, it's finding a lot of the, you know, something substitute, you know, something you can substitute or with alternatives. So how can we make that beautiful apple pie something that is, you know, we're used to this, but how can we shift some of the ingredients in there? And as a chef, that's what my goal is. And that's really what I focus on is like, how do we make it still taste really good and make it change it up a little bit, you know, and really make it still, you know, you want it. You not crave it, but you actually, you know, you still like the taste. And even working with the kids and parents too, that's kind of a big thing is working with substitutions and alternatives. So you don't miss some of the things that you're used to.
Thank you.
It's about freedom. I think it's really about freedom. Setting our kids free from a lifetime of disease and inflammation. So like so many people don't even know who their kids really are because they've been inflamed and brain altered and uncomfortable for their whole lives. And we get to set them free. We get to be free of the stuff that makes us sick. Like what could be awesomer than that? What could be awesomer than setting our kids free of chronic disease for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. Those are great points. We're going to wrap up here just for our time, but I appreciate everybody joining me today on this panel. And I learned a lot. I hope our viewers did too. And I wish we had more time to talk, but anybody else have a last point they want to recap with? Okay. Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us with this summit. And maybe we'll be back in the spring to help you transition into the spring and summer months. So, all right, everybody be well.
Thanks so much, Christine.
I wanted to tell you all about a volunteer organization that I started about 6 weeks ago. It's called Nightlight Inpatient Parent Support. And it is a phone hotline for parents who are in the hospital with their kiddos, either after a surgery or maybe in the NICU or just with an illness. And parents who are staying in the hospital with their kids feel alone. They feel like it is such a dark time. There really isn't anybody that they can talk to. Even other parents who are in the hospital at the same time with them really just keep to themselves because everybody's dealing with so much, but all these parents want is connection. So I started with the help of Kristen Parsons, a volunteer organization, and we are looking for volunteers. We are also looking for donations. Right now we're not a 501(c)(3) nonprofit. We're just doing this kind of on our own right now. But one of the ways that I'm going to get donations is via this podcast. So I want as many listeners as I can get on this podcast. So let me know what information you want to hear about healthcare advocacy. Please share this podcast out on social media. You'll be doing myself and families a big favor to get this into hospitals across the nation. So again, Nightlight Inpatient Parent Support. We're looking for volunteers to be part of our phone bank. If you need some support, you can definitely reach out to me and I'll have the link to the phone number for the phone bank. Thank you. In this episode of the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast, we talk with Dr. Nick Swiskey, who is a physical therapist and owner of Concierge Physical Solutions here in Denver, Colorado. And he is a mobile concierge physical therapist who works with executives and busy professionals, getting them the physical therapy services where and when they need it. He talks with us today about how to get better than average results, no matter what area of healthcare you are struggling with. So sit back and listen to Dr. Nick.